There we go.
Oh, hey. Why you're late? You sitting out there in the same chair I was sitting in. Took you so long.
Sending off emails.
Seriously.
To people. Some of us have people we need
some
to talk to.
Some of us don't get to sleep until 1:30.
Some of us have people we need to talk to every
day. Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Some of us know
you're
how to
important.
Some of us know how to use email.
Really?
It's Blair and Barker. Well, I mean, you don't.
I get somebody else to do it.
Man, I mean, it's like getting you through email is like, God.
I mean, you're not lying.
Seriously.
You're not lying.
I don't know if they didn't have electronic communication on your side of the mountain, but holy cow.
Cups.
Party
strings.
Lines. Party lines.
Yeah, other side of the mountain.
You realize nobody out there knows what a party line is.
No.
Did you have a party line?
I don't know. Oh, you mean the thing you stick to your ear and you roll?
No, it's where it's like you used to have it in rural areas where, party line, everybody was on the same line.
Oh, with the really long.
Everybody was on the same lines, but there'd be different rings, right? So like three rings would be the farm up the hill.
Medicine Hat, Canada. Well, where are you from? Medicine Hat.
You're such an idiot. I'm not from Medicine Hat. Please. I'm not from Alberta. I'm from Canada.
Oh, sorry. I get them mixed up.
Anyhow, but you could listen in to other people's phone calls on a party line.
Well, where are you from?
Had it in the States, too.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they did.
No,
they had it in North. Yes, they did.
No.
Yes, they did.
No.
You just never had anybody wanted to call you. That was the difference.
That's, played five sports, big fella.
Scott Boris. Hello, Scott.
He did.
He called you to say.
No. I had somebody call for me.
And what did he say?
No, thank you.
He said,
thanks
Kevin,
for calling.
Kevin Baker.
No, I'm good.
Anyhow. You probably know by now it's Blair and Bark. You can tell by the arguing. And the fact that I came in a really pissy mood today, so I'm going to apologize in advance. The Toronto Blue Jays. My Toronto Blue Jays are only a game out of first place behind Barker's Yankees. The Jays have made a roster move today. No surprise that Jimmy Garcia has been added to the roster. We knew who he was in town. Any surprise that Mason Fluharty is going down to the minors for Jimmy Garcia instead of, well, pick another reliever?
No, I don't think so. I think they're doing him a favor. There's certain times in certain parts of guys' careers that, you know, there needs to be a grown-up in the room. And you could tell just a sweeper wasn't sweeping, the cutter ain't doing things. When's John going to use him? I mean, they're in win mode, man. Like, you know, John's done a heck of a job the last couple of days of trying to figure out when other guys are not available, how to hide the guy that is available. And Fluharty's starting to be one of them guys, right, where if you're putting him in the game, you're trying to put him in here, depending on what the scoreboard says. Like, there's just too much going on of them trying to maneuver around what he, quite frankly, wasn't getting done. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a little hiccup in his career. He'll be back. Right, it's just it's going through the grind of a big league season. Never done it on a playoff team, but you know he's going through it to where, just when the stuff's not working and you got your certain roles. John's been on our show many times saying that
at least once a week.
The two lefties are two lefties and a righty, right? I mean, Little was for a while whoever he's throwing out there, that's who he was throwing against. I don't think it's that way anymore, especially now that Jimmy's back and Sandlin's back. Now you're getting the lefties in certain pockets, right, which will make them better, and I don't think they felt comfortable enough to run Fluharty out there against two lefties and a righty.
And I got to say this. I mean, we've seen enough from Mason Fluharty that I want him to go down there and be ready.
I'm a fan.
I am too.
I'm a fan.
Big-time fan
Me
of
too.
Mason Fluharty.
Yeah.
So I'd rather have him go down and get, you know, kind of get in a situation that's a little less pressurized. Yeah. I think that – knock on wood, if that guy stays healthy, I think he's going to be pitching for the Blue Jays for a couple of years. So I want him to go down and
Mike
and
Trout. What Mike Trout say? Everybody gets sent down.
Yeah, but that's
it's part of it. It does. Everybody gets sent down. It's part of being a big leaguer, trying to figure out how to get through
it. I think it's different for a pitcher too, because you know how the Mason Fluharty's smart enough to know how the option game works in baseball. I mean, unless you are a closer. A star closer, there's a pretty good chance if you're the, you know, what, 8th through 10th guy in the bullpen that you're going to be optioned out.
Do they really care about Justin Brule?
I don't know if they can send him down. He's only been up for a couple of days,
right?
Yeah,
I think for me anyway, this is more about Fluharty than it is about anything else, right? Yeah. I mean, they could see writing on the wall sort of, you know, the 11 innings in June, almost pushing 10 ERA. Like, that's, you know, that's some heavy lifting by your manager trying to figure out. And Pete Walker, I'm sure, has been doing everything possible to just make sure he's finishing. And, you know, if you miss, make sure the misses are big. He's giving up too many homers. He was too easy of an at-bat for a lefty, which is never a good thing. So they did him a solid. He's gonna go down, and he'll figure some things out. He'll be back.
Just checking to see if the Blue Jays lineup is out yet today. Of course, we're waiting. Here we go. Jimenez leading off. Springer hitting second. Guerrero third. Kirk behind the plate. Barger in right. Clement at short. Wagner at third. Schneider in left. Straw in center. Barrios on the mound. So no Bo Bichette for the third game in a row. Bo's still out with, I presume it's the knee irritation. We'll have John Schneider's media availability later on in the show, and we'll play it, and we'll see what John says about Bo Bichette. Joe Siddle will join us at 4:30. He, in fact, may be able to give us a heads up on what has gone on. Jason Stark of the Athletic, MLB Network, and co-host of the Starkville podcast will join us. We've got a lot to talk about. I think Jason was just in Italy on a vacation or something like that. So he'll join us.
Awesome.
We've got Jay's tickets to give away. And then Susan Waldman, one of our favorites, Yankees radio broadcaster, joins us at 5:30 as we get you set for the third game of this four-game series against the Yankees. The Jays, of course, 12-5 winners yesterday, the George Springer Day game. And they are now a game back. Will Warren against Jose Berrios. Why has Jose Berrios been better against lefty hitters recently?
Yeah, I think it's the two-seamer. I think he tries to front hip that thing a lot. I think it's been working. I think he's a little bit more mechanically sound with the rotation. You know, sometimes he gets a little too rotational with the lower half. That sort of throws off. Then it's non-competitive, and he throws more pitches. The more pitches he throws, the more often you're able to see the slurve, the manipulation of that sort of breaking ball, trying to get it to look 12-6, which he's been doing his last couple of starts. I do think it's just he's crowding the lefties a little bit more, which opens up sort of the outside part of the plate, allows him to miss a few more times with the secondary stuff. Arm speed on the changeup's been good. It's had good sank to it. I mean, when that thing's sanking and ain't straight, that's a pretty good pitch for him. So, yeah, I just think it's, you know, we said this how many times when Bowden was thrown. You got to pitch in. You know, you want to be a big leaguer. You want to be a starter every 5 days. You got to establish both sides of the plate, especially the lefties in. And I think Jose sort of took note of that and, you know, is starting to do that a little bit more and commanding it. And he is a tougher take, which for me is a big deal. When you're a tough take with all your pitches, it just you can't eliminate anything if you're a hitter, which makes him a better pitcher, which allows him to go deeper in games, which allows John not to have to use four or five different relievers, can use two or three, which is never a bad thing.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think where we kind of where we are with Jose Berrios is just quietly, you know, I know we talk about him in this show and, you know, his nickname, La Machina, the machine, right? We talk about his consistency in terms of availability and in terms of taking the ball and just kind of giving you the best that he has on any given day. I mean, we're getting at the point now where it's funny because I always feel with Jose Berrios, and I kind of feel guilty about this because quite frankly, he's one of my favorite player dudes in the team to deal with. He's just
a great guy.
Just a really class guy.
Yep.
But I always feel, Kevin, as if I'm underrating him or I don't talk about him enough or I take him for granted. And it's an odd feeling because, and I've talked to you about this, the only pitcher I can remember covering where I came away feeling that way was Javier Vasquez when he was with the Montreal Expos. Pedro Martinez told me one time, this guy's going to win a Cy Young Award. I mean, Javier Vasquez had everything, just like Jose Berrios did. But there was something that just prevented him from being among the elite pitchers in the game.
Yeah, the Khakis felt like they didn't want him to pitch to the meat of the order who was left-handed. You're trying to sort of maneuver around a playoff game.
Has he changed your mind enough here? You got to see it more, right?
I mean, I think he is what he is. He's old enough. He's pitched enough. I mean, how's he changing? Like, he is what he is, right? I mean, he's established in. It's just like his last start, right? That was his 11th quality start in 17 starts. He had the unpredictable mix with the four-seamer, the sinker, and the change, and that's the first time in a long time the slurve was great. Wasn't good. It was great. 78 punch-outs that he had were off the slurve. You know, he's making that look a little bit more like a 12-6 occasionally. He's trying to backdoor it to lefties, which is a big deal. He can, you know, backfoot it. Like, he's got three or four different versions of that pitch, which makes him that much harder to sort of game plan against when you're standing on the on-deck circle. I just don't know if he's number one. He'll be a number one for this team. A team trying to win a World Series, he ain't a number one. I mean, let's be real. I mean, let's just say it like it is. He's not.
That doesn't mean that he can't start a postseason game for you.
No, I'm not saying that. Yeah. But I'm saying he'll probably be the number one starter for the Jays. But he should, you know, if you're trying to win a World Series and you want to muscle up against the other team's number one,
Tariq Skubal or Max Fried.
He may not be that. You know, again, I'm not saying he's not a good pitcher, and I'm not saying he can't give a lineup a chance in a playoff game. But I'm saying if you want him to just basically say, you boys get out of the way, I'm going to give you seven scoreless. Could he do that against a good lineup?
Well, let's just think about let's think about the guys he would potentially be matched up against in a postseason game, just for comparison's sake. This isn't a Hammer and Jose Brios thing by any stretch of the imagination. But Yankees, it'd be against Max Fried, Gerrit Cole when he's healthy, but Gerrit Cole's not there. So Max Fried. Houston would be Hunter Brown. Texas, probably Jacob deGrom or Nathan Eovaldi. Detroit, probably Tariq Skubal. And then you get Minnesota, Tampa, other teams like it, but I just pulled those particular teams out at the top. And now then we can have the discussion, okay, the number two pitcher and the Jays get a little closer to a lot of those teams in terms of the number two pitcher. Yeah. All of a sudden, there's not that much of a fall off. But I mean, I'm with you. I don't know if that guy's out there. Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, they've gone to the postseason, but are they guys that you come in and you go, wow, you know, those are the guys that are going to give me an edge over those other pitchers I mentioned? Probably not. I don't know if that other guy is out there.
That's what I said. I think you should try and shorten the game. I think you should go out and get more power arms out of the
like
pen.
Like a Ryan Helsley.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe try and get two of those instead of getting you a starter, right?
Fair.
I mean, if Alec Manoah's coming back, that might be your sixth guy who can give you four or five innings and take a little pressure off the big three, at least giving them a break so when the playoffs do roll around, you're getting the best out of whichever guy you're picking, whichever two. You know, whether it's Max or Bassett, I would think that would be the two that would be fighting for the third game. But, yeah, I mean, it's look, Jose's been really good as a Blue Jay. I mean, and you can't argue or you can't be mad every time he gets the ball every 5 days for the Jays.
I mean, you can't. Again, I always tell you, that was a great trade. I mean, you look at what they gave up. You look at the innings they've received from
the quality starts they get from it.
The quality starts they get from it.
Yeah.
And this is something I've talked about with this front office. This front office, you know, you got to give them their flowers when it comes to the pitching. You know, sometimes we wonder about, you know, how you can have a big payroll and have a brewel in a big game, things of that nature. But you know what?
Still wonder that.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of that going around though. You've seen some of the guys the Phillies are running out. Phillies got a big payroll. You've seen some of the guys they're running out in
the
bullpen.
That's because one of their dudes is a PED user. That means it's a little different.
But the Jays are without one of their guys, Jimmy Garcia. I mean, it's you know, it's the same thing. You're missing one of your guys. So by and large, they've done a pretty good job when it comes to, again, last year aside. They've done a really good job in addressing their needs.
They've had surprises. Fisher, Little, Fluharty for the most part up until, you know, the last month here.
And you know what the best thing is? I'm going to say this. The best thing is they have, by and large, covered their ass when it comes to mistakes. You know what you never hear? You never hear the front office or the coaching staff bitching about Chad Green and his inconsistency.
Well, not out loud.
And no, but why is that? Trust me. There have been other front offices here where there would be a lot of open complaining about Chad Green.
Well, this front office don't speak a lot.
That
does it.
There would be a lot of leaks to people in the media. No matter, nothing public, but there would be a lot of leaks to the media about different guys. And that's one of the things that the Yankees were so good at for so many years. They had their payroll was so big they could cover their mistakes.
Yeah, I think they have a closer that they feel comfortable with. I think they have an eighth inning guy they feel comfortable with. I think Yariel Rodriguez is taking a step forward, which they feel real comfortable with. And then there's everybody else. And I think they feel like they can get by with everybody else if the three guys that I just mentioned are carrying most of the load, which going forward here, hopefully that's the case, right? Hopefully Hoffman has turned the corner. And we're going to start seeing the best version of that dude. You know, for me, he looked like he thinks he's a closer now. Can I say it that way? I think I did because I saw it that way. You know, when I see it, that's probably what I'm going to say. But, you know, just having Rodriguez and Garcia 6-8 and getting to pick and choose which pocket you want to put them two dudes in, that's cooking with gravy there, boy.
Ken Rosenthal, reporting this a little earlier today, the Braves have designated outfielder Alex Verdugo for assignment. That clears the spot for the return of Jerks and Profar. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, he can't be in the playoffs anyway, right? If they make the playoffs,
Profar can't be in the playoffs.
So
because of the PED suspension.
Alex said he's all in anyway. He's going to go out and make moves. I don't know what that means. I'm sure it's going to be some bullpen, some pitching, and some dude will hit somewhere around the middle of the order who can drive in runs. You know, they got a few problems there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would think somebody would take a look at Alex Verdugo.
A solid outfielder. He can hit in the bottom of the lineup. He's left-handed.
Yep.
Won before, which
all
is
right.
Not bad.
There's some other news. This is the Rangers opted. We'll be joined by Jason Stark. We can talk about this. The Rangers have optioned Josh Jung to the minors. Jake Berger has been pulled off the 10-day injured list. If you've been following it all, what has gone on with that? His spiral has been shocking. His spiral has been absolutely shocking. He's gone from being considered one of the game's really elite young players to, well, now he's back in the minors.
Yeah, I think they've stunk for a long period of time. When you stink, you got younger guys trying to carry the load, and they went through things, and you're asking them to do more than probably they're capable of doing. Maybe that's not fair. I don't want to say he's like Fluharty, but sometimes.
Oh, God, no, he's way.
We're talking about a guy. Holy moly. Like, I think it's sort of the same kind of what you're going through, right? I mean, you were asking a lot from Fluharty. You were asking a lot from that guy. When you're not sort of putting the two together, you got to make a change. It's more about the player than it is your team. I think that sort of might be where Texas is at, and I know that's where the Blue Jays are at. That's the comparison.
His average is .237, 8 home runs, 35 RBI, 73 strikeouts, 16 walks. But it's just, a reminder of or an indication of just how bad this year has been for Texas. They're 42 and 44, and they've you've sort of had the sense that they're starting to get back into it, but wow, that's
you're not hitting.
No, and that's a guy. I don't think anybody thought you'd see that guy go back down to the minors again. But
everybody goes
there
through.
You go.
It's hard. Big leagues is hard.
A bunch of stuff just moved.
It's hard.
Kevin Pillar formally announcing his retirement today.
Yeah.
Well done to Kevin Pillar.
Absolutely.
We'll get Kevin on the next couple of days.
He's got a great nickname. 100-plus homers, 100-plus stolen bases.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good career.
Yeah. And going out in his own terms for
I
the
like
most
that,
part.
Too, yeah.
It's
rare that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
13 years, man.
Good for him.
I mean, you want to talk about guys going down to AAA. You know, keep in mind that this is the guy that got – remember the whole story. He got sent down after it was a mild fit. Pitched a mild fit after John Gibbons pinched
it.
Was enough to get sent down.
Mm-hmm.
Kept his mouth shut, nose to the grindstone, came back up and had a really good career.
Yeah.
And I've always kind of felt that the organization and Kevin and Gibby, you deserve kudos for that, because you know there've been guys that have done that and get buried, and you never see them.
No
again.
Question. Yeah, Gibby's real good at sort of taking it and then just forgetting about it. He's real good at it. He gets it. He's been a player before. He understands, you're going to get swirly.
Yeah.
And you just sometimes got to go in one area, out the other. That's an art. Not a ton of people have that. Gibby does. It's kind of cool.
Pretty simple business if we get down to it.
Absolutely. But, there you go. Boom. Anyhow, so that's just all this stuff just kind of happened when we came on.
We didn't even mention Jimenez is leading off for the Blue Jays.
No, well, we glossed we glossed over. Did we mention the lineup yet? I read it out. Did I mention it on air?
Real quick, like it wasn't any big deal.
Jimenez is leading off. Is Ernie even in the lineup?
He better be.
Entertain the masses while I check. I'm sure he is. But I've got the lineup right here. It's just, I had the lineup right here. Now, of course, I don't have it. Yes, here we go. Yeah, Jimenez leading off. Clement is at short, and he is hitting sixth. Thoughts on Jimenez leading off? You made the point yesterday, and it's against Will Warren, the right-handers on the mound.
Yeah.
You made the point yesterday that he's made a change that I think I'm going to give you credit. You noticed it a couple of days ago, but I think we just kind of alluded to it. We talked about it in Blue Jays talk yesterday, but now that we're on Belair and Bark and we got the network with us, if you could kind of go over again what you see from Andrés Giménez, who did have a three-run homer yesterday and has just looked more hitterish.
Well, I think John is seeing the same thing that I'm seeing, that he's able now to lay off a pitcher's pitch. Like before he hit the homer off of Freed, he laid off the breaking ball away. It might have been a sweeper, but it was spinning. You know, it was strike to ball. He laid off that. It was early in the count, right? I mean, Freed was trying to let a dude that's hitting around 200 get himself out. That'll tell you that the lower half is on point. It's on time. Eyes are not moving as much. I see the ball right out of the hand, even against a tough lefty, which allows me to get something down the middle. I've said this, if you listen to me, forever. You let them, they're going to sooner or later do it. The Freeds of the world do it. They give up homers because they throw balls down the middle, but you got to let them. I think that's it. He had the scissor effect a lot, right, where the front foot, it's like Altuve. You ever watch Altuve, right? Stands really far off the plate. He steps towards the plate. Hands go sort of the opposite direction. Looks like a pair of scissors. That's what this guy was doing for quite some time. Just couldn't figure out why, whatever. You know, you're hitting under 200. You're starting to think about things other than where you're standing, the direction of your hands, your feet, where your barrel's going. You're sort of all over the place. You're trying to swing your way out of what you're going through instead of just, I've been there. Everybody's been there. Just that sort of, you go to the plate, you take a deep breath, you exhale, you think about, if I have good direction, I see the ball out of the guy's hand because everything's in line, I will have a decent chance because I have talent. And the manager has come on shows and told everybody that I can hit. All I have to do is get a good pitch because now I'm mechanically sound. It's the little knee turn instead of the big leg kick. I knee turn it. That eliminates a lot of positive move forward, which he was doing a ton of. You kick it. Sometimes you go too far forward. Head tends to follow. You lose sort of the ball. Then your barrel's playing catch up. And we all saw it, right? It looked like he was 7 days late. Now he's sort of eliminated the stride. Stride is a little shorter because he has more of a knee turn. Now I get it down. The stride's about this long. Posture's a little bit better. I see the ball a lot better out of the dude's hand. I'm not seeing it halfway. I'm seeing it out of the guy's hand because I'm on time. I'm balanced. I'm athletic. Now, all of a sudden, because my lower half is doing things they're supposed to be doing, hands are in the slot, I can get to a good finish. I think big part of the field, lay off a breaking ball, get a fastball down the middle. I'm inside the baseball. I got a big finish. I can get the ball in the air that way. I'm athletic because of that reason. Now you're in the leadoff spot. Is leading him off a big ask? Are you kidding me? Absolutely.
What would be your other option?
Not there.
No.
At least that's for me.
Okay.
There's righties in a row. I'm assuming this is why, and this dude's been hot for a couple of days. But, boy, it's a big ask.
Who would you have considered in there?
Ernie? I mean, I know that's righties in a row, and I'm sure it's matchup and – you know, righties against the guy that's pitching. I'm sure it's all that, right? And now you got to put Springer because of
What about Nathan Lucas?
He has trouble against a hater. Is this guy the right? I don't know. If you put Ernie there, then you got four or five righties in a row, which is never a good thing.
No, and it's easy with the.
I mean, they really don't have a leadoff hitter.
Yeah,
but again, this is a big ask. Because now you're basically telling this dude, I want you to stop thinking about just your A swing. Now I want you to get on base. That's a lot to ask, especially the way the bottom of the lineup all of a sudden is doing. I mean, you got the bottom of the lineup doing some things. You know, Schneider's doing some things. I mean, Wagner's going to give you a competitive at bat. At least looks like he is, Ernie, on base all the time. Barger does some things. Like, you can turn the lineup over with traffic on the bases with that guy coming up. If you feel comfortable with that, maybe. I don't know. It's just a big ask.
During the telecast yesterday, I think they showed the numbers for the bottom of the lineup. Pretty good. Like six through nine for the Blue Jays. The numbers are almost, are if not the best in the major leagues, pretty damn close.
Let's be fair, too. He could get one more at bat than Springer or Vladdy or Kirky.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have done just moved everybody up, but again, Vladdy don't like the two-hole anymore.
No.
You know, the half-a-billion-dollar guy has, he's said.
Joe Siddle is our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet. He's at the ballpark, and he'll join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's The Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is Blair and Barker for July 2nd. 7:07 will be the first pitch tonight as the Jays look to win. So up their series against the New York Yankees. Will be along following the game. As per usual with Blue Jays talk, it will be Will Warren on the mound for the Yankees against Jose Berríos. The Jays lineup is out, as we mentioned, Andrés Giménez in the leadoff spot. Well, let's hear if the skipper, John Schneider, anything say about this or how he explained it. Let's bring in Joe Siddle, our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet. Joe, thanks for doing this as always. Did you have a chance to hear from the manager why Giménez got the leadoff spot? And I guess almost as importantly, Joe, the status of Bo Bichette, who will be missing his third game with right knee irritation.
First of all, on Bo, yes, we just got out of the office with John Schneider, and Bo is going to be still day-to-day. When he was asked about a potential IL stint, he said immediately, no, we don't ever want to have to cover off days when we might have Bo available. It doesn't sound too serious. He was just on the field a little bit, fielding ground balls. So hopefully he's back very soon, but it didn't seem like this was going to be an IL thing. Time will tell. We've heard that before. And with the lineup, yeah, Andrés Giménez gets the start at the leadoff spot. And, big day coming off some, he's swinging the bat pretty well lately. And I asked the question about Nathan Lucas because David Schneider was in the lineup, not about the leadoff spot, but they just found it funny against Warren that you'd have a left-handed bat not in there. And it was just that David Schneider's been swinging the bat well. He had a good day. They think his profile works against him. And apparently he's had some success against Warren in the past, albeit I think in the minor leagues. But there's still a little history there that they delve into, and they felt that that was going to be the best matchup. He was asked the question about George Springer and the potential for him hitting leadoff. Yeah. And, of course, like all of us, kind of chuckled. I'm all for it. But I think he's very comfortable with where George is. And even moving up to number two, it's almost like let's just leave things alone. Things are working out very well right there. So last thing you want to do is have him go up to number one and maybe go in a little funk.
Why do you think George is having such a great season?
Well, Kev, I tell you what, after spring training, everybody's watching. It's like after last season and spring training, it's like, wow, what this could be it, right? I mean, we're kind of thinking what's gone on with George Springer. And we were all, I'm not saying ready to move on, but we were kind of getting to that point. Like, what are you going to do? Right.
I was ready to move on.
So, yeah, I mean, I think so, in all honesty. Yeah. And I think what I am seeing now that we're into July, because now it's not a month, right? This is well into the season. What I'm seeing from him is he is clear, and this isn't just a new revelation, but he clearly has a game plan to get the ball in the air. And whether that was talked among the hitting coaches and they brought that to him, whatever the case may be, he is clearly getting more tilt, more angle to his swing. And this is something that I think what his approach, and Kev, you've used the word upright. I think he's a tall, upright, erect type hitter, right?
Yep.
And sometimes that can be in and out of the zone and across. I think now when you see him, he really controls the forward move, but I thought he did that before very well. But when I look back now a little bit and I look at his swing now, I do see that he lifts that leg and he's got that stride forward. He really controls that stride the way it goes out forward, but he's really into his legs. And the way he is into his legs, think of being almost like not squatting into them, but really into your legs like that. And then those shoulders just tilt. It's just a tilt back. Mm-hmm. And I think before he was trying to do that, a similar move, but it was from a more upright position, and it was more around. And how many times did we see him out front, roll over, out front, roll over to the full side? I don't think he's necessarily trying to pull the ball right now. I just think he's trying to get it in the air. If it's a fastball, he reacts to it, and he performs that move to get it in the air. That curveball that hit off Fried yesterday, it was on the outside corner. And you can see the little bit of adjustability in that swing. He was just out front of hair, but with that move, he was still able to stay on it and through it. And I think the bat's working more. I always joke about a swing at a park. You know, a baseball swing is not a level swing, right? Everybody, you hear parents at kids' games, swing level. No, a baseball swing's not level. It's like a swing at a park. And I think that allows it to, the barrel drops in the zone earlier, it comes through, and he stays through it. And he was able to adjust on the fly right there to that curveball, which was, I thought the curveball home run was almost more impressive than the grand slam.
Yeah. Any surprise on your part that Mason Fluharty has been sent out to make room for Jimmy Garcia?
No, not at all. That's exactly the move I thought was going to happen when Jimmy came back. I thought it might be yesterday, but it waited till today. Mason needs to go down and just get kind of a reboot and get it going again. He was very good early on, you know, and this is a young guy in the major leagues, and he really contributed when you look back at some of the games that he pitched in the first couple of months, and clearly it hasn't been as good lately. I think it could be a combination of things. One, you know, early in the season when we see him pitching really well, he's kind of a high-intensity guy, pretty high-strung guy out there. And that was part of his competitive fire, I think. That's at least the angle that you take, or that's what it looks like. And then when he starts struggling, it's like now my narrative is like, oh, the game's speeding up on him. It's going too fast for him. So maybe he just needs to – he was used a lot. And so it's a combination of maybe the league knowing that his MO is basically two pitches, the cutter and the sweeper, and a little bit of fatigue maybe. I don't know that, but I'm guessing with his workload, maybe, and then the stuff's not quite as sharp. And you saw the home run he gave up to Bellinger the other night, kind of that lazy sweeper that stayed up on the outside corner. But if it's elevated a bit, they can still cover that pitch, and Bellinger did just that.
What are you seeing from Hoffman?
Good stuff. I think he's back, right? I was never really concerned. I'm not going to lie, guys. Like, I just, when you see him, sure, the velo ticks down at times and the splitter's not the same. And, you know, you see the odd splitter kind of hang at the top of the zone. I asked him about that the other day, because even when he's pitching well, he can do that. And he said there are times that he's just trying to fill the zone. Fastball, slider, split, doesn't matter. He's trying to fill the zone. And if he can get away with one in the zone and it's not where he necessarily wants him to be, he'll live with that. But ideally, no, he wants to start it down near the bottom and bury it and get the chase down. That's ideal. Doesn't always happen that way. So he knows sometimes he'll try to just keep it in the zone and it'll come out of his hand, just not quite the same. And the slider can be really good at times. And he just, the other day, splitter is working. He said, we went with the splitter more. And that's what you do. He's got two great secondary pitches to go with his fastballs. So the splitter's good, you use it. If the slider's good, you use that. But no real concern. And it certainly looks like he's back.
Yep.
So, Joe, of course, anytime anything happens to the New York Yankees, it's news. Mm-hmm. And we saw yesterday J.C. Ascara get called for catcher's interference. I believe that's twice in as many games. He's now got three catcher's interference calls this year and ties him with Victor Caratini of the Astros. George Springer, we know, gets a lot of those, gets a lot of catcher's interference calls. We saw yesterday Addison Barger. And Luke Weaver, I mean, I don't know, maybe as a point, he was talking about that, and he said, look, we all get the reasoning behind catcher's interference, but his point is, in that case, like, you know, the ball's by him, it's not going to, you know, he said it's not necessarily as egregious, right? It's not as if the glove interfered with the potential. I'm just getting what Luke Weaver said. And, you know, the Yankees are saying they wouldn't mind some clarification on all that. I mean, a couple of things about it. First of all, it seems to me that you guys talked about it during the telecast, and I've never caught a game, but I can tell just by looking at J.C. Ascara, one, that he's close, and two, that he, you know, he's trying to, there's a lot of movement back there when he tries to pluck at the ball. How do you view this, and how do you control it? You know, I mean, I think Aaron Boone, in some ways, just reading his comments, I mean, I think he's just getting frustrated by it, right, more than anything else. And we saw two nights ago, he was, the YES Network had a shot at him. He wasn't tying into Ascara, But they were having a very one-sided, very spirited discussion in the dugout, and it was Aaron Boone talking about this. So just talk to us a little bit about that. First of all, why does it not happen more? But secondly, do you think there's any issue with the rule the way it is now?
The rule's fine. I got a suggestion for you. Back up. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what they want everything, right? They want their catchers to get close so they can seal those low pitches. The further up front you can catch the pitch, the better off you're going to be in terms of getting strike calls. So that's what they're trying to do. We know that's rampant across the game. It's why they're catching on one knee. The framing is everything, and stealing strikes is everything.
Just wanted to jump in because I'm reading the article as you were talking. Boone clarified later he believes catcher's interference shouldn't be called on a check swing. Okay, that's just so you know.
But I would disagree with that, because on a check swing, if I hit the catcher's mitt on my check swing and hold up, and it's not a swing, you still impeded my path to the baseball. It's interference.
Right.
You can't have your cake and eat it too. So they want the catchers to be close. And in Escara's case, he's trying to get up there really close to steal strikes. But at the same time, you're right underneath the hitter. Now, I've talked about this several times on the broadcast now. It happens to George a lot because of the move we were talking about earlier there, Kev. He really turns. The way he turns the barrel back, and it's an ultimate compliment to a good hitter, because good hitters turn the barrel back and get on plane early. Well, when you tip the barrel back, if the catcher's glove's right there, now especially true on a pitch that's on the inner half of the plate, because now with your catcher's mitt, you're going toward the bat, to receive the pitch. I think it's pretty simple. You got to back up. You have to know the hitters. You have to know the hitter's swings, and you got to back up. I mean, if this happens to Escara again, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I found it, you know, the whole idea, again, someone who hasn't caught, the whole idea of being behind the plate and having a dude swing a bat. I mean, I'd be terrified of getting hit to begin with, first of all, in the head. And I understand the tools of ignorance and all this, the catcher's equipment, but it's got to be correctable, doesn't it?
It's very correctable. Back up. It's not that hard. Back up. You can't do everything. And if I had that happen to me once, I'd be so aware of it. There's no way it would happen again in the same year.
Did it happen to you?
Ever
as a player?
I mean, it probably did. Not that I can remember.
Right.
I can't sit here and say, yep, happened to me a few times every year.
Okay.
Heck no.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean, you know, I guess somebody could answer, well, yeah, maybe you were way too far back and didn't get strike calls. But I mean, come on, Jeff. I mean, you saw me catch. I mean, receiving was my strength of my game. That's not where the issue is.
Yeah.
That's why I got where I got.
Yeah.
So I think it's a lot of what we're seeing in the game today. And of course, we have all the data and all the framing metrics. And also, it's all about getting those great numbers and stealing strikes. And they're moving closer to do it. And it's the silliest thing. I chuckled as you were talking about it,
right,
because I can't even believe it's an issue.
Do you think, and again, Kevin, I'm sorry, I know you've got other stuff we want to talk about.
Yeah.
But do you think that it has anything to do at all also with the whole one knee, move to one knee?
Well, yeah, because the reason they're going on one knee is to steal more strikes, right? Give yourself a better chance, especially on the low pitches. And that's why you're seeing catchers' targets up, and then the glove goes basically to the ground, and then it comes flying up again. Well, as it's coming flying up, it's flying forward and up. So it's going towards the batter's bat. So if you're going to have that move, I mean, I'll take you back 30 years, right? I mean, we gave a target, and we received the pitch.
Yeah.
We gave the target, we received the pitch. Received. Take it in, accept it. Those are the words we used when we were learning how to catch in the Lantana, Florida, with Louis Bulhos in the minor leagues.
Yes.
The Montreal Expert.
That horrible facility in Lantana.
Joe, I think I got you on the backswing a couple of times. Toledo, I was with whoever
on,
I was with. Big swing. I took the big daddy hack. Right.
Oh, on the backswing.
Backswing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the backswing is a totally different thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the backswing, and the move you just make, some guys, and usually they're bigger guys, power hitters, that get long, and they have a big, long follow-through. I've gotten hit in the head. I had my ear split one night in Detroit, and I was out for 2 days because I needed stitches in the side of my ear. I ended up going to that goalie-style mask for a little while just to protect the side of my head. But, yeah, you get hit on the side of the head, you get hit on the back of the wrist, the hand, that all happens. But receiving a pitch and catcher's interference with the batter hitting you, that should not happen more than once a year.
Okay, Joe, let me ask you about Berríos, about the slurve. I mean, he's doing different things to it. He's backdooring it. He's throwing it, looks like a little 12-6er. Looks like he's changing speeds on it. So he's got like four or five different versions of it. It was really good, his last outing. How does he duplicate that this outing? and sort of feed off, because there's going to be some lefties. You got to maneuver around Judge. You know, if John has to step in, I'm sure John will step in because he's done that the last couple of days. But how does he make the slurve look the way it's looked the last two outings?
I think he has an incredible gift of spinning the baseball. I mean, some pitchers, I remember talking to Pat Henkin about this few years back in spring training, and what a guy that could spin the baseball. I asked him if it's a true skill. Do you think some guys can spin the baseball better than others, or can you just teach them? He said, no. Some guys, it's DNA. Some guys, it just comes off the fingers that way. That's Jose's moneymaker, and I think we really saw that in that last game. He absolutely, I don't want to say embarrassed, but he obliterated Story. It was Seidon Rafaela and Connor Wong, the three righties in the lineup, and he was just spinning them, and they had no chance. So I think what he'll do against this Yankee team that's a very good fastball-hitting team is the same thing, but really what we've seen a lot to the left-handed hitters is he'll try to backdoor it. So he'll start it away and bring it back. He can, I think, manipulate, get a little bit more depth at times. He can throw it harder as a wipeout, kind of a berry pitch if you're trying to put a guy away. So that's a great thing. But I think it's his best pitch. It doesn't mean you're not going to get hurt on it, because you throw enough of them, you guys know, you're going to hang one once in a while and maybe to the wrong guy. But it's been a great pitch for Jose, and I expect to see a plenty of them again tonight.
Okay, let me ask you a dumb question. I know Judge is coming to town. We know John likes to. Yeah, absolutely. Well, there you go. Likes to pitch around and has pitched around Judge. How do you think the clubhouse is handling that? The pitching staff? If they're
okay, they love it.
If they're okay with that, or does it matter?
I hope they love it, and I hope they're okay with it. You're trying to win baseball games.
Yeah.
When the New York Yankees come to town, Dan and I have been talking about this for 2 days now. There is no way I want Aaron Judge driving in any meaningful runs in this series.
Yep.
For four games. And you know what? For 2 days, so far, so good.
Yeah.
Now, he might erupt the next 2 days. Of course, he's doing all, but I love the way they're handling him. Just keep doing it that way. And, hey, in the first inning, he might hit a solo home run. I won't call that like a meaningful run driven in, even though, of course, it is. But I'm talking more in the fourth, sixth, eighth, ninth innings. I don't want to see a two-run homer or a three-run homer by Aaron Judge. John Schoen, he's just going to keep walking him.
Yeah.
And I love it. You're trying to beat these guys. And to me, and all due respect to everybody else, to Jazz Chisholm and to Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, a different animal.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would rather have Aaron Judge score a run in a game than drive in runs in
a game.
I just wonder
if it's Jimmy Garcia or Hoffman with a runner on, how they'll handle it. Like, it's one thing, the Brules of the world, the Littles of the world, they're left-handed, right? That's a different story. If it's one of the meat of the guys, I'm talking the meat of the dudes, and you're basically saying you can't get him out. How will he handle it? That's the thing. That's the only thing I'm asking.
Kev,
yeah.
Kev, that's a great question, because guess what? We got involved now a little bit. We got some egos involved a little bit now. We got the big setup man and the big closer.
Yeah.
And you know what? I hope this happens now, because I didn't think of that.
Me too.
I think you don't change your game plan, and I think he's going to get walked by Jimmy or by Hoffman. Oh, man, now you got me. I can't wait to watch
that
game.
Yeah. Barker, now you got me thinking, too.
I don't know.
That's great.
I don't know, John, because John. John likes the veteran thing, and you know, how dare I get in front of – yeah, he sort of stays out of their way, and he'll get in everybody else's way. I wonder how he'll handle that. It'd be cool. It'd be interesting to see how it works out. Yeah.
Great point you brought up. Can't wait.
Yeah, me too.
Joe, we're going to let you scoot. Thanks, man.
Awesome.
Be well.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys. Be great.
See
you later. That is Joe Siddle, Blue Jays analyst in Sportsnet. And, yes, Joe is not blowing smoke, having seen Joe – when he was with the Montreal Expos and knowing his reputation, Joe was an elite receiver of pitches. The guys loved throwing to him.
Well, I think if you ever watched him hit, you know why he made it to the big leagues. I mean, no fits. I played against Joe. Joe's not much offensively, which is okay. I mean, that was the thing. Backup catches were a big deal. Whenever I was coming up and I was playing, you make a lot of money being a backup catcher.
Felipe Alou always used to tell me that the guys he managed who should have been managers, he said Siddle was a guy that he thought when he was with the team, he said he'd make a great manager.
I don't know, stabbing at the ball, trying to get it before it breaks, tricking the umpire, you know, the movement of the glove, all those things. That's how they're taught now. You need to see Kirky doing it. Kirky don't give with the ball.
But he doesn't.
He stabs at it.
But he's
like, he'll stab at it, right? I mean, he's small in stature, which I think helps him, his gloves stay away from the hitter.
That's the thing about catching.
But he still stabs at it.
That's the thing about catching. I'd be scared
crapless about getting whacked in the head with a swing.
They're pretty protected. I mean, it's more the backswing, right? The ear, the side of the head is a little bit more open than, you know, you'd have to really stick it out there for somebody to hit you other than in the glove. I just think I'm with Joe.
Didn't somebody fracture?
Stop whining.
Did Wilson Contreras
fracture his
hand?
Yeah.
And I think that's why he's at first base, right? Because he fractured his hand.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about it a lot. Catchers can get paid a lot of money right now, framing pitches and stealing pitches and tricking the umpire.
Until next year.
Poor umpires.
Oh, yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, until next year, until ABS is in some form. There's still going to be room for pitch framing, though, because you're not going to be
– Tricking.
There's not going to be –
I just don't get it.
There's not going to be – it's not like every pitch is going to be appealed.
If I'm a good catcher and I know I'm an umpire and I'm standing behind a good catcher – and I know that guy knows how to just softly catch the ball. Why would a good catcher move it if he thinks it's a strike?
You know what? I think you just...
As soon as he moves it, ball. How hard is it?
It's
real simple.
Because it may not have been a ball.
Okay.
Well, no. It may not have been a ball.
Okay, you see the catchers.
Yeah, but and you've seen umpires still...
Realmuto does that all the time. Yeah. Moves at feet.
But they don't always call it a strike.
Yeah, but if you've umpired long enough and seen good catchers, it's the bottom of the zone, obviously, that they're trying to steal the strike.
I think you're overlooking the fact you're in a game, all the stuff going on. I mean, you're sitting there looking at that in TV. I think it's different. I think it's probably harder behind. And yeah, you go into a game. I'm sure you know that there are some catchers that are going to be more active. Some catchers are going to try to steal pitches, but you can't second guess the catcher if you're an umpire any more than you can second stand at the plate and second guess an umpire's a hitter. Should I swing at this because the dude may call it a strike?
I can't say to the catcher, "You move it again, it's a ball." I can say that. Stop moving it. You want them called strikes? Don't move the glove anymore.
I think you're overthinking it as usual.
Yeah, I think you've never stood in the box before. I think that's what it is.
But whenever you see catchers
moving balls that far and getting called strikes,
it does matter. That's why they move it, because it works. Again, you're making it sound like they're moving it in every pitch.
Almost every pitch that is in one certain zone, they move them up. Look, watch Kirky tonight.
The number of times in a game that a pitch that is obviously a ball gets called a strike, it's not as much as you think. You just hate umpires.
Hate's a strong word.
I think
they should be treated just like we're treated.
Which is what?
Well, you stink, you go down.
And who do they bring up?
Who cares? Think they were thinking about that when they sent me to the top prospect?
But you know what?
They cared? They just knew I stunk at it.
Yeah, but you know what? With all due respect, there were 120 Kevin Barkers.
If you go back and look for the Brewers, there wasn't. There was one Kevin Barker.
Later in your career.
Okay.
But the point is, there's not as many people who have umpired major league games.
Man, spend more money on umpiring then. Holy moly. Like some big leagues.
There's not as many people who umpire.
Oh, really?
You think there are?
I think there's plenty of umpires in the minor leagues
that are good.
That umpire games, just as good as they are now. Yeah.
Just as good. What does that guy do? You want better. You don't want just as good. You want better. I don't want guys who are just as good as the guys here. I want guys who are better. So you're convinced that there's a whole bunch of umpires in the minor leagues better than these guys?
No.
All right.
But I think when the umpire at the big leagues is not very good at his job and misses a lot of calls he shouldn't be missing, why do you think ABS is coming in? Because they're all good? Or they miss calls they shouldn't be missing?
Why do you think
it's coming in for? There's complaining because there's betting because umpires are missing calls
ABS
in games that matter. That's why it's coming in.
ABS, you're not going to have every pitch in the game.
You're going to have enough in big moments that it matters.
I think you're overthinking it.
Well, that's your opinion. It's a bad opinion, but that's your opinion.
Yeah. I think you're overthinking it. Mm. Susan Waldman will join us at 5:30. We'll get you set for 7:07 first pitch tonight. I mean, you just don't like umpires. Jason Stark will join us at 5:00.
Some of them I did.
Yeah, there are some. That's true. You have actually said there are umpires that.
And I've named them.
You have named them.
And then there's everybody else.
And there's.
Whatever somebody says.
One list is long.
All it takes is one guy to go. That's a real big number you're wearing, isn't it? And then they're all left in the same group.
Jason Stark will join us next. We've got Jays Angels tickets. Susan Waldman as well. There may be a lot of umpires, but there's only one Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet.